You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hello. This is Safety Wars for Friday the 13th. I was tempted to wear my Friday the 13th t-shirt today, right, from Camp Crystal Lake Counselor. I bought that and wore it at my first, that's now a Boy Scout camp. My son went for camping there as a Boy Scout. I wore the shirt the first day. My wife was like, that's going to be a little bit tacky. Well, everybody got a good laugh out of it. They said, well, this is the most appropriate shirt they've ever seen. So welcome to Friday the 13th. We had some news on the story about the origin of that. If we have time, plenty of things to talk about. I was only on the air one day this week. A lot of traveling back and forth. So I was out of the studio. I was on a laptop. I hope you enjoyed my commentary on that. All right, safety one, safety two. With that, we have a new logo here. A new thing here. Let me call it up. Lower right-hand corner. Let's see if we got something really larger. Let's see. Do a screen. Yeah, there we go. See that? Legalize safety. Safe work isn't a crime. That's part of our theme for this year with... You know, it's in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. Maybe I'll figure out how to make the thing turn around, right, and flip. Why is that? Now, I sent that on along to my wife, and she's like, no, what? We don't get it. I don't get it. Legalized safety. I said, you know what? The people who need to hear that are going to understand it. Why is safety and working safe treated like we're committing a crime? Hey, you're bad for wanting to work safe. Oh, yeah, they're out there. Oh, you don't need to do that. You don't need that safety glasses. You don't need that hard hat. Right. All in the while, and there's been, because of the ICE situation, I don't mean the cold weather. I mean the immigration customs enforcement stuff. You get people, civil crimes, and civil. I don't want to get on to that, right? But let's realize that if you are, now how is OSHA normally, right, a workplace has, how's that normally treated? On the federal level, it's essentially, unless you do some kind of fraud, it's usually treated as a civil case. Those are civil crimes. How many people a year die in the workplace? Right, 5,000, give or take, that we can track on that OSHA 300 log, which should be prominently displayed in your workplace since it's February. And then another 55,000 that they can't really track, that they know are from workplace illnesses and things of that nature. So all civil, right? And a lot of people die. Auto accidents, a lot of civil crimes going on there. A lot of people die. So a lot of this stuff is treated civilly by the agencies, if at all. And you have to end up battling things out in civil court, not criminal court. Well, it is here. So just because something is civil, a civil crime, doesn't mean that it actually is safe and it's actually good and there's nothing wrong, nothing to see here. Go and look the other way. No. Not so fast, folks, on that. Now, with safety one and safety two, we had that discussion on the last program. Right? That was prompted by a lot of... I was prompted by a situation, like I said, I wrongly got involved on a discussion on LinkedIn. And, right, real simple. People, why does safety one work? There's a lot of assumptions on that, meaning behavior-based safety, traditional safety. Low-hanging fruit is one of the reasons. There is a lot of things you could do by administrative controls, which we know are one of the most unreliable controls out there and still don't get rid of hazards. They just tell the worker on how to avoid hazards. So you have low-hanging fruit. Hard hats, safety glasses, gloves, safety-toe shoes, maybe a little bit of guarding, and things of that nature, right? Very easy to measure. But are the numbers you are getting relevant? Are they true numbers, right? Because how many times have I been involved? You've been involved. Everyone here in the listening audience here, tens of thousands of people out there. How many times have you been in a workplace where they say, hey, if you report that, our numbers aren't going to look good. So guess what? Don't report that. Or let's take it out the back gate and we'll worry about it on your insurance never gets reported. We'll go, which is illegal, by the way, and I explained that last time. That happens more often than not, especially with a smaller company that does not have a full-time safety person there, who might not have developed a full culture. And there's a lot of businesses out there, believe me, big businesses. It's in their business plan not to work safely. Oh, we're never going to get caught on that. Our NAICS code says only 1 in 144 companies like ours are going to get, I had that statistic this week, are going to get investigated by OSHA. So guess what? Chances are they're not going to be here. We're going to roll the dice at 1 in 143. They're not going to be here. And therefore, we're not going to do some type of safety activity. We're not going to worry about it. we're not going to we're not going to listen to the safety person on that. Where we'll give them a little bit of lip service. And guess what? You're the safety person. Maybe they're paying you an okay wage. Maybe they're not. You have a wife. You have a spouse, I should say, more correctly, right? More accurately. You have children or people who are you're responsible to. You have a mortgage. You have that. Where's your incentive? Your incentive is not to do that. So this is, and the other thing is, when things go wrong, what happens? Damn you, blah, 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 you know, with that. And, oh, we're a safe company. We hire a safety person. We hire a safety consultant. And then what happens out there? Right? Nothing goes right. Then you have, but the thing is, for safety one to function, you have to have safety two, which is more, you know, and I know there's a lot of things. I get it. We're oversimplifying things here on a certain level. But you need the soft skills. You need the organization of safety too. Where rather than go around, and I should have the graphic in the back, right, with the four lights. Now, how many lights are there? There's four lights. No, there's five. Right? And then after a while, yeah, there you see five lights. Right? For your Star Trek fans there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You have a tribunal right there. Right, and what happens is that you have to go, and under safety two, leadership, organizing, rather than let's worry about what always goes wrong, which we have to investigate anyway, let's worry about what goes right, and let's have to promote that what goes right. Let's have a learning, rather than an investigation team, let's have a learning team where we actually learn what happened, what were the events leading up to that, what we could change, how work is supposed to be done, how work was done, and let's go for there. Why wasn't it done? Blah, 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 and be less adversarial here. You'll get better results. Believe me, you will get better results. The other thing is this. Safety professionals, not only get off your knees, but safety professionals, go out there and be those leaders that I know you can be. Be those leaders that I know you that are in there. Don't be a jerk with that. And that's my opening monologue. We have some EPA news coming up. Big news, huge news, right? On the AI front with the Department of Labor, more huge news on that. All right, we talked about AI the other night. We're going to be talking about that. So this is what I'm going to tell you. We're going to go to commercial break, and we're going to come right back. We have a little song here for you. Safety professionals, get off your knees.
Steel-toe boots by the job site gate. Clipboard heavy with a weight of fate. Just sign it, don't slow us down. Don't make waves, don't shut it down. But I've seen the blood on the ground. I've read the names on the reports when they were passed around. A hard hat crack tells the truth, no lie. Somebody rushed, somebody waved it by. They call us overhead, call us a cost. But they never count what a life would have cost. Safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built. Professionals, get off your knees.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
And we are back here. We are back. EPA, big, huge news here. We're going to be going right to the, and there's a lot to talk about here, a lot to unpack. A couple of weeks ago, we had mentioned and we had discussed here, what is the value of a life? And with the new, what's the word I'm looking for? The new valuations for human life, they're going down and down and down. And they had made one valuation at zero. So that has broad-based broad-based effects, implications out there. Here we have another one from the EPA this week on February 12th. This is yesterday, but it was announced on Wednesday, but the press release was yesterday. Here, oh, I can share this because it's the government press release. President Trump and Administrator Zeldin deliver single largest deregulatory action in U.S. history. That is probably likely a true statement on that. That's not rhetoric. Alongside President Trump at the White House's Roosevelt Room, U.S. and EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced the single largest deregulatory action in U.S. history. In this final rule, EPA is saving American taxpayers $1.3 trillion. I don't know if that's over per year or in total here, eliminating both the Obama-era 2009 greenhouse gas, that's GHG, endangerment finding, and all subsequent federal greenhouse gas emission standards for all vehicles and engines of model years 2012 to 2027 and beyond. The action also eliminates all off-cycle credits, including almost all universally hated start-stop feature. I believe that it has to do with the DEF for, that's DEF for diesels. They basically take watered-down urea, and put it in a device to burn off secondary things. And there's going to be a lot of some pollutants there. Reduces PM 2.5, if memory serves you right. So EPA's historic move restores consumer choice, makes more affordable vehicles available for American families, and decreases the cost of living on all products by lowering the cost of trucks. This major deregulatory process included substantial public input and robust analysis. This is a quote from Zeldin. The endangerment finding has been the source of 16 years of consumer choice restrictions and trillions of dollars in hidden costs for Americans. Referred to by some as the holy grail of the climate change religion, his words, not mine, the endangerment finding is now eliminated. The EPA, Trump EPA, is strictly following the letter of the law, returning to common sense policy, delivering consumer choice to Americans, and advancing the American dream. As EPA Administrator, I am proud to deliver the single largest deregulatory action in U.S. history on behalf of American taxpayers and consumers. As an added bonus, the off-cycle credit for the almost universally despised stop-start feature on vehicles has been removed. The 2009 endangerment finding was used to justify trillions of dollars in regulations, including the Obama and Biden administration's illegal push towards electric vehicle mandates and compliance requirements, while simultaneously driving up the costs of vehicles for American families and small businesses, limiting economic mobility and the American dream. The final rule will save Americans $1.3 trillion by removing the regulatory requirements to measure, report, certify, and comply with federal greenhouse gas emission standards for motor vehicles, repeals associated compliance programs, credit provisions, and reporting obligations that exist solely to support the greenhouse gas regulatory regime. Right? In finalizing this rule, EPA carefully considered and reevaluated the legal foundation of 2009 endangerment finding and the text of the Clean Air Act in light of subsequent legal developments and court decisions. The agency concludes that Section 202A of the Clean Air Act does not provide statutory authority for EPA to prescribe motor vehicle and engine emission standards in the manner previously utilized, including for the purpose of addressing global climate change, and therefore has no legal basis for the endangerment finding and resulting regulations. EPA firmly believes the 2009 endangerment finding made by an Obama administration exceeded the agency's authority to combat air pollution that harms public health and welfare, and that a policy decision of this magnitude, which carries sweeping economic and policy consequences, lies solely with Congress. Unlike our predecessors, the Trump EPA is committed to the following the law exactly as it is written and as Congress intended, not by what others wish it to be. This is not, by the way, let me point this out. We've been covering this for a while here. People ask about EPA. Look at the other EPA press releases, right? And also with OSHA compliance from insiders. I remember we don't have numbers yet, but they are just doing what is called, right, in a fancy way, minimum compliance, where we are going to follow the letter of the law, period, end of discussion. That's it. Just following the letter of the law. So, for example, there were press releases in the past couple of months that said, under statutory requirements, we are reporting that we have hit this on this project, whatever the goal was on that. So let's get back to the press release, because this is an important one, folks. Right? The endangerment finding was a legal prerequisite used by the Obama and Biden administrations to regulate greenhouse gas. There was a Trump administration in the middle there. Let's not forget that. In the last 16 years, the endangerment finding, many of the predictions and assumptions used to justify the rule did not materialize, using the same types of models utilized by previous administrations and climate change zealots. EPA now finds that even if the U.S. were to eliminate all greenhouse gas emissions from all vehicles, there would be no material impact on global climate change indicators for 2100. Who was the first one to say that? A lot of people. I was one of them way back in the day, which pissed off a lot of people when I was in graduate school. And that's what, by the way, what the IPCC 2001 report said, and subsequent ones on that, depending on which model in those reports you wanted to use. Therefore, maintaining greenhouse gas emission standards is not necessarily for EPA to fulfill its core mission of protecting human health and the environment, but regardless, it's not within the authority Congress entrusted the EPA. Today's action only related to greenhouse gas emissions, and it does not affect regulations that combat criteria, pollutants, and air toxins. So I guess that means the DEF is in there, I guess. We'll see. Like I said, there are broad-based implementations for this. We don't know what all of them are. And the next paragraph here, I won't read here, but it's basically, this action will result in the average cost savings of $2,400 for vehicle. Good luck on that. I don't think the auto industry is going to give that back so easily now that people are used to paying that. Prioritizing consumer choice, the endangerment finding enabled the Obama and Biden administrations illegal post-war EV mandates. I think that's going to piss off Elon Musk. The Trump EPA chooses consumer choice over posturing. Well, they're giving it's along the lines of how much is your choice and what kind of vehicle to buy and what choices you make. How much are you okay with the government impeding on those? The libertarian part of me says not so much. However, we'll see what happens here. Understanding the importance of this action, EPA conducted transparent and inclusive rulemaking processes. They received 572,000 public comments on proposed rules and everything. And here you go. You can visit this website here if you really want it. With this, dude, I already have a subscription to this. Fact sheet, EPA delivers single largest deregulatory action in U.S. history, major cost saving for Americans. And this gives the whole summary of this here. What else do we have here? So just look it up on EPA.gov. And here they have a timeline. A lot of this stuff is, if you're a student, you could go and look at some of the history here with this. Nice timelines they have published here. And we'll move on to our next story here. But that's a big freaking deal, guys, with that. Here's some of the commentary here. I got to take this off. President Trump's on EPA today, and this is from the Heartland Institute and our friends at Heartland Institute. They've been on this show already. Schaumburg, Illinois. President Trump's on EPA today announced the repeal of an Obama-era rule called the endangerment finding, which categorized CO2 and other greenhouse gases as a threat to public health. This move cuts the legs out from under the EPA's climate rules, which allow the federal government to impose ever-increasing regulations on automobiles and appliances in an effort to reduce their carbon footprints. Remember when we were all supposed to go, they were encouraging gas, right, natural gas for kitchens, and then they said, no, we got to do electric. And then they figured out they don't have an electric with this. And that's basically it on there. All right. A lot going on out there, folks. Interesting times. Here we have from the New York Times. Trump administration erases the government's power to fight climate change. Right? Rigorous scientific findings since 2009 have shown that greenhouse gases and global warming are harming public health. So this story is from Lisa Friedman. This action is a key step in removing limits on carbon dioxide, methane, and four other greenhouse gases that scientists say are supercharging heat waves. Led by a president who refers to climate change as a hoax, the administration is essentially saying that the vast majority of scientists around the world are wrong, that a hotter planet is not the menace that decades of research shows it to be. It's a rejection of the fact that had been accepted for decades by presidents in both parties, including Richard Nixon, whose top advisor warned of the dangers of climate change, and the first president, George Bush, who signed the International Climate Treaty. Right? And they're coming on and on. I don't know. I don't know. What do you think? I know what those folks are going to say. This is from the, what kind of Times is this? RV Times, Rockland Valley Times. EPA, I think that's Rockland Valley Times. EPA's, and this is from, who wrote this? EPA cites benefits to farms as it stops regulating carbon dioxide. The EPA renounced its right, I love this. The EPA renounced its right? You can tell, this is where the problem, this is why I chose this. Its right to regulate greenhouse gases, a decision defended in part on how higher levels of carbon dioxide could help agriculture. That's a big statement in American history, and I think we can add the words by far, Trump said. And so this says a lot, doesn't it, about philosophy? We talk about rights all the time. Where do rights come from? You have two, in America today, you have two different things where rights come from. You have on one side where rights come from God or natural rights, also known as, or you can, and the other one that says rights, and therefore, right, according to our founding documents, our rights have to be protected by the government, our rights, right? With that. And government can be the only one to take away their rights. That's by extension. Here we have here, the EPA has renounced its right. The government does not have rights. Has responsibilities. There is no such thing as rights. People have rights. Government does not have rights. Governments are created by people. So governments get whatever authority or whatever power they get from the people, not from nature. People are the only one with rights. This is what bugged the hell out of me all the time. And some friends of the program back when I was in, that I know are out there. Tom, you're out there. I know that. Tom from Iowa. Right. You're a buggy. People have rights. No, the state's rights, 10th Amendment, state's rights. No. People have rights, not the government with that. Government gets its power from us, not the other way around on that. All right, let's move on over to AI. I had spoken about AI the other day, and there were warnings on AI. All right, let me get this out here. AI builders, this is from Emerge, decrypt.co. But we covered the program at length. Yes, covered this story at length yesterday. Basically, at least in brief, at least, and this is a story by Jose Antonio Lanz, L-A-N-Z, and edited by Sebastian Sinclair from the Clan Sinclair. Right? With that, at least 12 AI employees, including co-founders Jimmy Ba and Yuhan Tony Wu, have resigned. Anthropic said testing of its Claude Opus 4.6 model revealed deceptive behavior and limited assistance related to chemical weapons. Ba warned publicly that since systems capable of recursive self-improvement could emerge within a year. More than a dozen senior researchers have left Elon Musk's AI lab this month, part of a broader run of resignation safety disclosures by several organizations, I might add, right? Several departing employees publicly thanked Musk for his opportunity after intensive development cycles, while others said they are leaving to start new ventures. Wu, who led reasoning and reported directly to Musk, said the company and its culture would stay with him forever. The exits coincided with fresh disclosures from Anthropic that their most advanced models had engaged in deceptive behavior. Yeah, no shit. Concealed their reasoning. No shit. And in controlled tests, provided what one company described as a real but minor support for chemical weapons development and other serious crimes. What, we're shocked that human beings would create something that would be deceptive? We were shocked that human beings would create something that would do nefarious things and be slightly malevolent? We're shocked? Really? Really? That's why we have safety too, folks, in response to these malevolent systems that we're out there creating. Right? Not malevolent, malevolent systems. That's one of the reasons why we do what we do here. We should mark that one for a promo here, right? Around the same time, Bob warned publicly that recursive self-improvement loops, systems capable of redesigning and improving themselves without human input, could emerge within a year, a scenario long confined to theoretical debates about artificial general intelligence. In other words, it's figuring out, it's learning on its own. Taken together, these departures and disclosures point to a shift in tone among people closest to frontier AI development, with concerns increasingly voiced not by outside critics or regulators, but by the engineers and researchers building the systems themselves. So when was the first time Jimmy Poelzel had heard about this? I'm going to look it up because I have an exact date on this, right? Hold on, animated series. The first time I heard of this, and it was one of my most One of my first memories, believe it or not, it's way back there. One of my first memories, it was September 21st, 1974, on or about. It was season 2, episode 3 of Star Trek, the animated series, which won, I believe, a daytime Emmy, the series, for educational type stuff, about when a computer program, Rogue, takes over the Enterprise and does all different kinds of stuff. You can look it up. So I've been hearing this, one of my earliest memories, September 21st, 1974, the first time I got introduced to Star Trek, right? And, you know, remember, no, Star Trek, you know, we got Spock back here from a muck time behind me. This is a long time coming. We're warned. And, oh, this is a joke. This is a joke. On the other hand, the elite who are funding this stuff always have a way, always have stuff going on where they tell you what they're going to do before they do it. Some more AI news here, right? Let me check my time here. Okay, we got time. Right, I don't want to go over here. And again, it's Valentine's Day Eve, so I don't want to PO Mrs. Pozel there. That would be a real bad thing. The UN General Assembly voted overwhelmingly. This is from the Associated Press article by Edith M. Lederer. The UN General Assembly voted overwhelmingly Thursday to approve a 40-member global scientific panel on the impacts and risks of artificial intelligence, with the United States strongly objecting. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who established the panel, called the adoption a foundational step toward global scientific understanding of AI. Dude, I just told you when they, and believe me, that's the animated series, September 21st, 1974. One of my first memories that I have. All right. And this was on the original Star Trek series. And have we ever heard of iRobot by Isaac Asimov? I believe that was 1957. I'm probably wrong on that. But it was sometime in the 1950s, if I recall. With this, it was also mentioned in Star Wars, where they had the droids and everything. All of this scientific, 2001 Space Odyssey, all of this stuff going on in sci-fi, where we've been warning about this. So what happens? UN says, we got to start studying this. Well, welcome to the party, folks. And now you understand why, what was it, about 3 weeks ago, we left 66 or 65 or 67, something like that, organizations in the UN? Really? Okay, well, I'm interested to hear what they're going to say, but maybe some of those people that are no longer in those other organizations went into this one here to study AI, right? And drink their lattes and drink their cappuccinos and other coffee drinks at the UN while they study this. By the way, I'm not the one who first reported that, right? Far from it. From people at the UN who reported that. One of them, who I personally know, he has described it as the first fully independent global scientific body dedicated to bridging the gap, knowledge gap in AI, and assessing its real-world economic and social impact. We've been doing this for 4 years! Okay, so does it say why the UN voted no? U.S. Mission Counselor Lawrence Lovelace called the panel a significant overreach in the UN's mandate and confidence. AI governance is not a matter for the UN to dictate. Hasn't this been a running theme with the current administration? And there are certain groups out there, that one of which I belong to, that have been pointing this out for time and memorial with this here. And UN needs to be reformed, at least in my book. Now, Department of Labor... here. Did they take it down? Hold on. Oh, hold on there here. I think they took it down. Hold on. Let me do a find here. I thought I had it up and running. Okay, here we go. This is from today, right? But it was released last night because I remember reading it last night. U.S. Department of Labor releases all AI literacy framework providing foundational content areas, delivering principles to guide nationwide efforts. Now, could it be that we voted no because we're already way ahead of everybody else on this stuff in this country? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. U.S. Department of Labor's Employment and Training Administration today published a framework. I should be sharing this. For artificial intelligence literacy, providing a foundation to nationwide AI literacy efforts, right, across workforce and educational systems, right? Hold on. I got to write this down. NAI, right? The framework, which outlines five foundational content areas and seven delivery principles for AI literacy, is intended to be a resource to guide program design and deployment of AI literacy efforts while allowing for flexibility and adaption across industries, roles, educational sectors, and other workforce-related contexts. The Department of Labor is committed to making sure all American workers are able to share in the prosperity that AI will create for our economy, says Secretary of Labor Lori Chavez de Remer. Our new AI literacy framework provides guidance that will help accelerate effective AI skill development across the country. To build the next great American talent pipeline, we must equip all students with the skills necessary to address tomorrow's challenges, said Secretary of Education Linda McMahon. Is the Secretary of is that place still around? I don't know. I thought it was gone, or soon to be gone. We are proud to work with our agency partners on this historic guidance that will not only advance artificial intelligence and education, but also help build the workforce for the golden age. The release of this framework follows the department's recent guidance promoting the use of workforce innovation and opportunity act funding and the governor's reserve monies to help participants develop AI skills. The framework reflects input from employers, training providers, state and local agencies, and other workforce and education stakeholders, and will continue to evolve based on stakeholder input, advances in AI capabilities, and labor market changes. The publication of the framework advances the Trump administration's broader commitment to prioritize AI literacy and skill development across the workforce system to ensure American workers are prepared for an AI-driven economy. It supports the department's role in implementing the AI Action Plan and America's Challenge Strategy. ETA welcomes feedback from workforce and education system stakeholders on effective AI literacy efforts, barriers to success, and opportunities for further guidance. So let's go and look on some of this. So the recent guidance, let's click on that. What is that? Training and Employment Guidance Letter Number 3-25 from August of last year, and the PDF document. So, real simple. They want to encourage and the state and local workforce development systems to use Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act funding to help with youth and adults develop AI skills. Action required. State and local workforce development boards are encouraged to use blah, blah, blah. And what do they want here? On April 23rd, 2025, President Trump issued Executive Order 14277, Advancing Artificial Intelligence Education for Youth. AI is rapidly transforming, and they want to go and get everybody up to speed here. And this is all the funding for it, for dislocated workers. So what kind of components are we looking at here? Does not say in this document, but it does say in another one. Let's go to that other document. Here, AI, right? At five foundational content areas. U.S. Department of Labor's AI Literacy Framework. For those of you listening to our audio version here, I encourage you to go to our video here. Understand AI principles, explore AI uses, foundational content areas. Understand AI principles, understanding AI's core concepts, right? And capabilities and limitations, creating the foundation for effective use. Directly explore, right? And then number two, explore AI uses, directly exploring different AI tools and relevant use cases and how AI can complement human expertise. Number three, direct AI effectively, understanding how to provide the right context to AI, very important. Prompting is critical to AI and how to create clear prompts that produce effective outputs. Evaluate assessing AI-generated results for accuracy and relevance and understanding how to iterate on AI inputs and how to use AI responsibly with that. Right? So now we go into our effective delivery principles of AI literacy. Enable experiential learning, delivering AI literacy through practical hands-on experiences that allow AI skills to be practiced in real-world situations. Build complementary human skills using AI to augment human skills such as judgment, creativity, communication, and problem-solving. Number five, pathways for continued learning, providing structured routes to progress to more advanced and specialized AI skills and AI-related occupations. Ensuring there are proactive built-in mechanisms to rapidly update content and deliver as AI capabilities evolve. Right? Embed learning in context, integrating into existing processes and in the context of the industry or characteristics that make it most actionable. Four, address prerequisites to AI literacy, addressing barriers of participation and success with AI literacy, including digital literacy and broadband access. Number six, prepare enabling roles, equipping manager, counselors, and others who play a supportive role in AI's learning. And number seven, design for, right, you have number five, I think, why I skipped, pathways for continued learning, right? Design for agility, ensure there are proactive built-in mechanisms to rapidly update content and delivery as AI capabilities evolve. So what is my point? Oh. By the way, they're watching Hofstra versus Mississippi baseball tonight. So my nephew is on the Hofstra team, Division One. He's the catcher, number 28. So apparently they won on that. Congratulations. And they only had like five outdoor practices because guess what? We got a foot of snow here on the ground now. Right? We had 3 foot last week, so we're getting better here. But anyway, hold on. Okay, they're screaming like they're winning, but they're losing. I don't know. You go figure. Even if they got two runs, the commentators are already saying they only had like five outdoor practices this year. We'll see how it goes with them. Anyway. AI, I mean, now, none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. You got to look at the big picture with AI on all of this stuff out here. Well, what do you mean, Jim? You have to look. There's a lot of stuff going on. We're finding out here. Let's pivot a little bit. You're finding out, and this is where AI is really being worth its weight in gold here. The Epstein files. Nobody in their right freaking mind is going to be able to read all these millions of documents, millions of pages related to them. AI is doing it real quick, a couple of minutes for a lot of this stuff, right? And what they are finding out where everything, one of the things that one of the commentators did say out there, which was incredible, is that it's always the same families that are running all the shit in the world. Right? So you got these families involved with Epstein, and you find their members of those families running all different kinds of stuff. They don't go away. It's sort of like we have families in this country that never seem to go away. You have the Clinton family. We've been hearing them since the 1980s. They're still there, still having an impact. The Gore family, who are, unfortunately, Al Gore, all that he could be was a heckler at the last conference that he went to, right? Again, been around since 1960, the family, running things, running this, running that. And then you get, they get involved in financial things, all the family, not only Gore, all of them. Bush is the same way. It's always the same people running everything, and it's always the same people involved with Epstein here. The same, not the same people, but maybe the same families, the same circle that they run with. So none of this stuff, right now we have AI, where none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. Context matters, where we're using AI to analyze Epstein, but we're also using AI for all different types of stuff, useful, true stuff, stuff that's truthful. We're using AI, right, with this in our workforce. We're promoting it in our workforce, increase productivity, not to leave the American worker behind, allegedly, and everything else. But then we have, well, now the UN wants to study this and maybe put up things. Well, no, we're going to vote no on that. Well, same day they voted no, they had this here, with this initiative. Everything is connected, and people are starting to wake up. I've been waiting for this stuff since 1992. People waking up the spring of 1992. What's going on out there? There were books out there written even then, but nobody wanted to read them. One of them being America, What Went Wrong, which detailed all of the different insider stuff. You had certain organizations that formed, one of them which formed in 1957 that I'm a member of, been pointing out all this stuff, none of this stuff, trying to connect the dots, blah, 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 blah. Connect the dots here. AI, that's why AI is such a powerful tool. You are able to connect the dots. The problem is with it, sometimes it connects the dots wrongly on this stuff. So I'm glad that we're up there doing things. What other news do we have here on this? Let's start. We have, it's 50 minutes after the hour. So what can we do in 5 minutes here with this? And by the way, this weekend, since Valentine's weekend, we're going to have a special program here, a Valentine of love-themed safety music. And believe me, HR wouldn't like a lot of this stuff, right? A lot of HR groups out there. Let's see what else here. We haven't talked about the Olympics, but we will talk about them tomorrow. Some of the highlights here. This is a good one. All right. When my son was 5 years old, this sounds like something he would do, right? A pilot fired over Christy Noem's missing blanket and the constant chaos inside the DHS. Is from the Wall Street Journal today. Story by Michelle, or yesterday it was, story by Michelle Hackman, Josh Dossi, and Tarini Party. Christy Noem knew she needed a reset. It was 2 days after the federal agents had shot and killed Alex Preti, and Noem was facing fire on all sides. Even, right? They needed to help. Goes the whole story. Noem's top advisor, Corey Lewandowski, mentioned Trump's pollster with a request. They needed to cut an ad to help her, according to two people from too familiar. And it goes on and on, saying some not so nice things about Christine Noem here. Here you go. Within DHS, Noem and Lewandowski frequently berate senior level staff, giving polygraph tests to employees they didn't trust and have fired employees. And one incident, Lewandowski fired a U.S. Coast Guard pilot after Noem's blanket was left behind. Must have been one hell of a special blanket was left behind on the plane. According, isn't like the pilot in charge of flying the plane the pilot is not like a flight attendant. Not that there's anything wrong with flight attendant. I like flight attendants. They're usually overwhelming me the amount of times. I've been always been nice with me and everything. And they have thanked me when I had one thank me profusely when we had a whole bunch of unruly children on a plane. And my daughter was afraid of flying, so I brought puppets and I put on a puppet show for all the kids on the plane. And all the kids were, like, nice and entertained and laughing. It was a very pleasant flight. And she was like, man, sir, you are a freaking god, you know? Here, I've never seen anybody put on a puppet show for kids on a plane. And I said, well, I got not the first time. Red Skelton was another one. Who's Red Skelton? Well, you know, his plane was crashing. He didn't want the kids to be afraid, so he got up and put on a show for the kids while the plane was going to crash and the plane recovered, right? With that, with laughing children there. But Lewandowski fired a Coast Guard, right? Simmering, right? And then what do you think happened? What do you think happened when they fired the Coast Guard pilot, right? Well, they figured out, They figured out that, oops, we need somebody to fly the plane back, so you're rehired. Oh, yeah. Come on. I know somebody who would do that. I worked with somebody who would do that. I'm not going to mention names here. Here we have another use of AI. Pentagon used Anthropic's Claude in Maduro Venezuela raid. Using the model through a contract with Planter highlights growing role of AI in the Pentagon. So here we have AI encouraging bad behavior, even on a little on the surface level. I'm scratching it. And now we're going to have the U.S. military doing that, right? God forbid that they actually allow AI to actually make decisions. We're all bleeped if that ever happens with that. I don't know. A lot of stuff going on. We plan on being broadcasting this weekend. I am amped. I am up and running to go. I have no more filter anymore, folks. I have nothing holding me back, and I am dedicated to serving you folks. There is no governor. There is no filter. There is nothing here holding me back. I'm letting it roll all the way out and giving you your high-quality programs as high-quality as I can. I feel great. I feel wonderful. Let's head on into this weekend, this holiday weekend, feeling great, wonderful, and everything else. And for Safety Wars and Safety FM, this is Jim Polzel.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
This one goes out to the American gold medalists.
steel-toe boots by the job's at gate. Clipboard heavy with a weight of fate. Just sign it, don't slow us down. Don't make waves, don't shut it down. But I've seen the blood on the ground. I've read the names on the reports when they were passed around. A hard hat crack tells the truth, no lie. Somebody rushed, somebody waved it by. They call us overhead, call us a cost, but they never count what a life would have cost. Safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built on accountability. Stand up straight, say what you see. Safety professionals, get off your knees. Morning brief in a half-lit shack with a rolling end, no turning back. Foreman says we'll figure it out. I say that plan's got holes, no doubt. I don't answer to shortcuts or production lies. I answer to families and closed casket cries. From most regulations to hard-earned scars, the same paperwork, it's who we are. We don't work for comfort, we work for the truth, and the truth don't bend for a deadline due. Well, safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built on accountability. Stand up straight, say what you see. Safety professionals, anti-work, this ain't anti-crew. It's pro everybody going home like they're supposed to do. I've walked the sides, I've run the calls, I've heard the quiet after the sirens fall. So if they say you're being difficult, I'll wear that badge like a hard-won belt. From the trailer park to the boardroom seat, same message echoes down every street. Compliance without courage is just theater play, but leadership means standing in the way. So cue the mic, turn the volume high. This is Safety Wars, no alibis. Safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built on accountability. Stand up straight, say what you see. Safety professionals, get off your knees. Yeah, this ain't a favor, this ain't a fight. It's a line in the sand for doing it right. So boots on the ground, eyes open wide. Safety wars, stand up, don't slide.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people, but somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy. now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion. The book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the signal. For the first time, all three books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.